We want a smash, crash, smash, blast the system. We want to get it hype, get it live, get with the mission. We want the crowd loud, fist pumping, rhythm is hitting. We want to make it clear, we ain't scared. This is the vision we want.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips. Today's show, the Fukushima nuclear disaster 4 years later. We'll hear from attorney Charles Bonner about the ongoing lawsuit regarding U.S. naval personnel who were exposed to mass radiation off the coast of Japan just after the March 2011 earthquake and tsunami that crippled the Fukushima nuclear power plant. Cindy Folkers of Beyond Nuclear shares her latest research with us about ionizing radiation and its impact on health and the environment, particularly regarding the ocean. We get an update from nuclear engineer and expert Arnie Gunderson. He's been instrumental in closing of nuclear power plants around the world. And Libby Halevi, creator of Nuclear Hot Seat, rounds out the program on this fourth anniversary Fukushima special on the Project Censored Show. Stay with us. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. Today, we focus on the Fukushima nuclear disaster coming up on 4 years since that took place. And we have four special guests today. Updates from Fukushima. It's still going on. It is still unraveling. And it is arguably a bigger catastrophe than originally thought, though the corporate media spends very little time dealing with it. So we'll look at that for the hour. Here is my co-host, Peter Phillips, with a quick shout out to Project Censored's founder, Dr. Carl Jensen. Peter?
Dr. Carl Jensen founded Project Censored in 1976. And for 20 years, he was the director and then passed it on to me. And then I passed it on to Mick. And it's a shout out today to Carl Jensen. Thank you very much for that founding effort that you were able to do 39 years ago. And we certainly appreciate that. And we want to acknowledge you today.
Carl Jensen, thanks very much for everything you've done for Project Censored over the years. It's an honor to try to fill the very big shoes that Peter has left, and I am now in with Andy Lee Roth. I wanted to read a fantastic quote that Carl wrote in one of the Censored books 20 years ago, ever more relevant. Carl Jensen wrote, "Since we all benefit from a more responsible media, we all really should help bring it about. To do this, the corporate media owners should start to earn their unique First Amendment privileges. Editors should rethink their news judgment. Journalists should persevere in going after the hard stories. Journalism professors should emphasize ethics and critical analysis and turn out more muckrakers and fewer buckrakers. The judicial system should defend the freedom of the press provision of the First Amendment with far more vigor. And the public should show the media it is more concerned with the high crimes and misdemeanors of its political and corporate leaders than it is with the crimes and gossip of celebrities. The effort will be well worth it." Carl Jensen, that was 20 years ago. Couldn't be truer today. Thank you again for all of your contributions, and we're honored to carry on Project Censored in your name. Here's Peter Phillips introducing today's guests, and we'll begin with Charles Bonner, and then we'll continue down the list through Cindy Folkers, Arnie Gunderson, and Libby Halevi. Peter?
Charles Bonner has been practicing law for more than 35 years and is the lead attorney in over 65 jury trials involving civil rights, police misconduct, employment discrimination, and personal injury. In addition to Mr. Bonner's law firm, he's a partner in other firms representing 233 men and women of the U.S. Navy in a class action lawsuit for being exposed to deadly radiation while serving on the USS Ronald Reagan in the operation near Japan after the Fukushima earthquake and tsunami. Charles, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Thank you very much for being back on our show. We'd like to get an update on the lawsuit that's going on the Navy personnel that you're representing. Our understanding, there's actually been some deaths that have occurred at this point. So give us an update on what's happening.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Unfortunately, there have been three deaths since I spoke with you last. Most recently, here on February 18th, we had a two-year-old kid, Jade Dotson, to die. His father was on the Reagan, went home and impregnated his wife. His wife gave birth to a little boy, and the boy was born with brain cancer and various tumors down his spine. And ultimately here last month, this child passed away. Likewise, we had a 26-year-old kid to die of leukemia. He was on the Reagan Charlemagne Eritardo. He's left two kids. He died of leukemia. And we have also an unfortunate death of Mr. Theodore Holcomb. Theodore died of a very rare cancer, a synovial sarcoma. There's only 0.001% of the population under 60 years of age who contract that particular form of cancer. So this is what's going on. Our amended complaint, third amended complaint, has now brought in General Electric, Ebasco. Ebasco was a company created by GE, and GE built the Fukushima nuclear power plant along with Ebasco, which was the engineering architectural firm that also created this particular power plant. We also brought in Hitachi and Toshiba because they were also involved in creating some of the reactors there. The sailors continued to call us with various manifesting illnesses. Within the last 2 weeks, we've had at least two sailors call in and say they're having really life-threatening illnesses. One sailor, who was 26 years old, told us that his doctors had diagnosed him with muscular injuries, that where his muscular system is just degenerating, and there's no cure for it. And the only diagnosis that they can make in terms of causation is the fact that this kid was exposed to radiation on one of the ship doing Operation Tomodachi. So this case is expanding, unfortunately, in terms of the number of young sailors who are ill, but we have expanded it to bring in four other defendants in addition to Tokyo Electric Power Company. As I mentioned, we've now brought in these other four defendants because after we filed a lawsuit and we continued to do research and we learned that General Electric built a bomb back in the 60s when they built these reactors, these boiling water reactors. And they lit the fuse on this bomb in around the 70s, 71 through 75. And they lit this fuse in spite of knowledge brought to their attention by various engineers that these boiling water reactors would not do what they were designed to do, namely contain radiation. In the event there was an emergency, they would not contain the releases. And so right now there's an urgency to get this case resolved. We have these young sailors who literally are dying on us. And TEPCO and GE are continuing to fight and bring motions rather than do what is right, which to assess what is the condition of these young sailors, make a determination what are the medical needs for them, how much that's going to cost, set aside a fund, and take care of these sailors. They put their lives on the line by providing humanitarian aid to these victims of this earthquake and tsunami. They responded to this Operation Tomodachi, which has helped our friends. Now we need that same concept, help our friends, to be applied to these young sailors. There were 70,000 in total who were first responders to this event. Some were on the various ships in the 7th Fleet, and others were stationed in Japan. But right now, all are injured, and we have 237, as you mentioned, but there have been at least 10 additional sailors have contacted us since we filed the Third Amendment complaint back in November of last year.
Attorney Charles Bonner, thank you again for joining the Project Censored Show. When we last had you on, it was with Lieutenant Steve Simmons, and we talked about his case, and we're talking about an entire task force here that was exposed on the USS Ronald Reagan and other ships. How's the Navy responding to this in terms of medical treatment for the personnel? I mean, is there any response effort going on right now, or is there stonewalling as the suit goes forward?
Well, first of all, we don't have any criticism of the Navy in terms of causing the injuries to these sailors. The Navy, in our viewpoint, has not responded appropriately dealing with these various illnesses. They take the position that the sailors were not injured in the course of their duties, and therefore the Navy is not responsible for their medical needs.
Was it their duty to clean off the decks?
Yes, absolutely. It was their duty to clean off the deck, and they did do that. And there are all kinds of photographs taken by the Navy of these sailors out there scrubbing down the radiation off the Reagan and off these other ships. The Navy has also taken the position that these sailors were exposed to only a low level of radiation, as much that one would be exposed to in a transatlantic flight.
That sounds absurd.
It's totally absurd. They've made this report to Congress, and it misses the point. First of all, they do not have a gestalt approach to looking at this. For example, they have not looked at the totality of the circumstances. No one has talked to any one of our 200 and now 250 sailors, for example. No one from the Pentagon or from the Navy has asked them what is going on with their lives. Instead, they've used outdated statistics to try to come to a conclusion that these sailors could not have been injured. And they're looking at only external exposure. They're not looking at internal exposure, the inhalation of radioactive particles. The sailors were, of course, using desalinated water where they were cooking with this water and bathing in it and brushing their teeth with it at the time that Tokyo Electric Power Company was releasing 300 tons of radioactive water every day while the ship was anchored just 2 miles offshore from Fukushima, and you could see the mountains in the background from the Reagan. So these particles also have a way of penetrating the skin and getting into the lungs because they're trapped in fatty tissues like the liver, like the lungs. And the Navy has not looked at the kinds of injuries that could result from that kind of internal exposure. They've only looked from what potentially could happen from an external exposure. So the Navy has not come up with any kind of empirical approach to understanding what is going on with these sailors. They've essentially not only thrown them on the bus, but they've thrown them off the ship. And that is totally unfortunate.
Charles Bonner, my understanding is that 80% of the fallout occurred over the ocean when our fleet was there, literally. So, I mean, not only was water pouring into the ocean, making it radioactive, but fallout was coming through the air and it impacted our fleet. That fleet had over 30,000 personnel. So your class action suit, that could expand into thousands and thousands of people. Is that correct?
Well, absolutely. It already covers 70,000 people. And you're right. The prevailing wind as a result of this tsunami was blowing the radioactive particles right out to the Pacific Ocean. One of the commanders, Troy Mueller, on the Reagan measured the radiation on the Reagan using the devices on the ship itself. Of course, the ship is a nuclear-powered ship. It has devices to measure any kind of release of radiation on the ship. But they measured the radiation in the air as being 30 times higher than normal. And then they started running away from the radiation. They moved the ship from 2 miles out to 50 miles at sea, 50 nautical miles. And they were still taking on these copious quantities of release of radiation. And even then, they moved the ship 100 nautical miles, which is about 125 regular miles. And at 120 nautical miles offshore, they were still taking in, at that point, 30 times higher than normal. So the Navy itself admits that these sailors, who were literally marinating in radiation, they admit that they were exposed to this high level of radiation, but at the same time, they claim that it was only a low dose, and therefore they're not responsible for their injuries. And we're not suggesting that they're responsible for the injury. TEPCO and GE, those are the responsible parties. But at least the Navy needs to put pressure on these entities to take care of these young sailors who put their lives on the line for these victims of the earthquake and tsunami.
Well, Attorney Charles Bonner, we're going to take a brief musical break, and we'll be back to continue our conversation. Stay with us. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Today's program, the fourth anniversary of Fukushima, we're dealing with that. And we are also joined again today by Project Censored intern, Maya McHugh. Maya, thank you again for joining us. A student of Susan Rahman at College of Marin, been working with Project Censored this semester, and you've been coming to the radio every week. And we'd like to have you participate and ask Charles Bonner the next question.
Thank you, Mickey. I just had a question about the TEPCO industry and how the Japanese government, there are delays in that, the outright lying about the what you were just talking about before our musical break, about these sailors marinating in this radiation. And I just wanted to further ask why they're refusing to pay for, obviously, this horrific accident that has occurred to these sailors.
Well, because they engage in this lying and denying because they afraid the world, in my viewpoint, will understand that nuclear power energy is a very dangerous way to create electricity. It's planetary suicide. And if they make an admission that what they have done here is in fact dangerous, it will go against this, you know, multi-trillion dollar industry. However, they initially lied and said that there was no radiation release. But since that time, TEPCO has actually come out and admitted that they were negligent. They created various lapses in their safety protocol. So they've had no choice but to make these admissions. Naoto Kan, the president at the time of Japan, has come out and admitted that TEPCO lied about the timing of the meltdown, telling people that it occurred several days after the tsunami, when the truth was that it occurred within 4 hours of the earthquake and tsunami. And into that unknown, our sailors crews to jump into the water, rescue people, to provide food and water, and take helicopters filled with water, totally unaware that there were these copious quantities of radiation being released into the air. It is monumentally unfair. It is causing the death of our sailors. And TEPCO is still fighting and trying to get this case, one, thrown out of court altogether, and secondly, trying to get it moved to Japan. And GE has now come in and joined in this effort to have the case thrown out. And it's just not the way human beings should treat people who've gone out and tried to rescue and were successful in rescuing victims. The right thing to do would be to take care of the medical needs of these sailors. Mm-hmm. That is not being done by any of these defendants, neither by TEPCO nor by GE and the rest of them.
Attorney Charles Bonner, thank you so much for joining us today. Do you have a website or maybe any other place you might advise people to go learn more or follow this case?
Yes, and we desperately need people to go to our website. It's FukushimaRadiationVictims.net. We need them to go there, and you can see how you can join in and help these sailors. But call President Obama, call your elected officials, tell them to put pressure on Japan and on GE to stop this litigation and do the right thing and take care of the medical needs of these sailors.
Attorney Charles Bonner, thank you so much for joining us for this very important and timely update, and thank you for all of the work that you're doing in support of the people that were contaminated, radiated, and now are sick and dying. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
FukushimaRadiationVictim.net. Here is Peter Phillips to introduce our next guest. Peter?
Cindy Folkler has been working beyond nuclear since 2007 and is focused on ionizing radiation and its impact on health and the environment. She interacts with Congress, the public, media, international agencies on the effects of ionizing radiation. And in her work on radiation, she emphasizes the use of precaution in the face of uncertain health outcomes, rather than exposing people to a substance like radiation where it's unknown what kind of harms can really happen. Cindy, are you with us?
I am. Thank you for having me.
It's really great that you're back on with us. And you had just completed a research paper on Fukushima's catastrophe without end, and you're updating. What's the current situation there?
Well, as far as we know, they are still releasing. The Fukushima ruined reactors are still releasing billions of radioactive isotopes per day into the Pacific. As of August 2014, 2 billion becquerels a day of cesium, 5 billion of strontium-90, 1 or 150 billion becquerels a day of tritium, depending on which number you use. And this is another thing that TEPCO, I was listening to the segment before. Another thing that TEPCO doesn't seem to understand is they gave, for the number of radioactive isotopes, they gave for tritium 150 or 1 billion becquerels a day in a single press conference. So they gave two different numbers for the same isotopic release. This was in August of 2014. And so when they give information like this to the public where they aren't clear exactly what it is, because I don't think they know, then it's really a big ask for us to trust what they're saying. So I'm giving you these numbers, but who really knows? Which is why I say that we have to continually monitor both the water in the ocean in the Pacific. We need to monitor along the coastlines, and we need to monitor all of the sea life that we eat and the sea life that we don't eat, in order to really get a robust picture of what's going on here. And we're going to have to do that for decades, possibly generations.
Cindy Polka, is Pacific seafood safe to eat? I'll just ask you that out front.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to answer that question, and here's why. I think that question takes people's minds off the bigger picture, and the bigger picture and the longer-term question is, why are we having to ask that question in the first place? We're having to ask that question because there was a triple meltdown in Japan, and a couple of explosions, and a major, major release of radioactive material, some of which may never be identified or tracked. And these designs were designs of our making. They were U.S. reactor designs, GE designs. And so the question really needs to be focused on, what do we do knowing what we know about Japan being a technologically savvy society, and it still happened there, and it's still releasing, it's still going on, and they're trying to cover up various aspects of it, or they simply don't know. They don't have a handle on this accident. We don't have control of this accident at all. So it's a catastrophe of potentially major proportions, and we really don't have a full handle on what's going on. So I would rather turn that question, which is sort of narrow in scope, into a bigger question of, what are we doing to make sure that this doesn't happen again?
Cindy, I certainly get that, and I think that's a really important piece. I understand, however, that the restrictions on radiation content in Japan are stricter than they are in the U.S., so that fish or our product could be sold in the U.S. It isn't sold in Japan. Is that true?
Yes, theoretically that's true. Now, the FDA doesn't measure or monitor food coming in from Japan or fish coming out of the Pacific as much as we would like them to. Their limit is 12 times what the U.S. limit is. And the question that raises, of course, in my mind is, why are we subjecting American children or people, but children in particular, because they are particularly sensitive to radiation, to 12 times more radioactive poison than is allowed for children in Japan? And I think that that's a very salient question, and it speaks to sort of the morphing nature of the way that they try to, quote unquote, protect us from radiation. It doesn't make sense because it's not consistent. And even 100 becquerels per kilogram of cesium-134 and or 137, which is the allowable limit in Japan, is not protective enough for kids. We have petitioned the FDA through citizens' petitioning process, which is a legal vehicle for citizens to approach the FDA for change, to get the 1,200 becquerels per kilogram of cesiums down to 5. And that is actually in alignment with a physicians group out of Germany called International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. They are asking the European Union for 4 to 8 becquerels of radioactive cesium in the food there. You know, they have the problem with food being contaminated from Chernobyl. And even they have lower limits on food contamination. Theirs is 300 for children for cesiums and 600 for adults, although goodness knows how they separate out adult food and children food. But that's another complication. So we're trying to get the limit down here in the U.S. We filed a petition. It's almost 2 years ago as of this day. And they have yet to give us an answer as to whether or not they will do this. They haven't denied it. They haven't accepted it. They've said almost nothing.
Hi, Cindy. This is Maya talking to you from College of Marin. I am a student working with Project Censored, and I just had a question for you. What are the differences between Chernobyl and Fukushima?
Chernobyl, a lot of the radiation that came out went on land, and it happened to be farmland. It was the breadbasket, Ukraine, Belarus. It was considered the breadbasket of the former Soviet Union. And it also happened to fall on bodies of water, but these bodies of water were smaller, and they were very different from the Pacific Ocean and salt content and all of that stuff. And that all makes a difference when you're trying to track radionuclides in the environment. So they had a huge land deposition. Fukushima, on the other hand, supposedly, if the numbers are to be trusted, 20% of the initial release from Fukushima went over the land of Japan, and it was also farmland, a lot of it organic, but then the extra 80% went out into the Pacific, and that's not including what's going out into the Pacific currently and has been leaking pretty much since the day the accident began. So 20% on land, 80% to the Pacific, which has, you know, a high salt content and is quite different from a lot of the already contaminated bodies of water that we see in Chernobyl, in that it's different salt content and it's got a lot more water. So that's sort of how the accidents are different. In general, though, with an accident like this for Chernobyl, you had 100 or more different radionuclides. A lot of them were short-lived, so they wouldn't have necessarily an impact. But the problem with Fukushima is that, and to a lesser extent with Chernobyl as well, they seem to focus on the cesium isotope, which is bad, and it should be monitored. But it's not the only isotope of concern. There's strontium-90, there's radioactive hydrogen, which is tritium. There's carbon-14, which is radioactive carbon, which I've heard nobody mention at all. So those are four isotopes of concern right there, and really they only seem to be interested in measuring one. So when I talk about a robust monitoring system, I mean we should be looking for all of these isotopes.
Thank you so much. I just have one more question for you. The present solutions that we're doing right now, how long are they going to work for, and how long do we need to keep monitoring these things before we need to possibly change our actions?
Well, the lifetime of the isotopes, so they've got something called a half-life, and then they've got something called a hazardous life. So the half-life of the isotopes that we're looking at are, let's say, cesium and strontium are about 30 years, carbon-14 is about 5,700 years, tritium is about 12 years. So 10 to 20 times that number is actually how long the isotopes will be hazardous. But what we have to understand is that you're not only dealing with the half-life, you're dealing with the circulation in the environment, and sometimes they go down in the soil and then something makes them come back up and they re-suspend themselves in the water and become available for fish to take in, et cetera, et cetera. So the problem is it's a dynamic system, it's a living system, it's a moving system. And in order to understand how these things travel in this system, we're going to have to continue to look. And I know that, you know, Woods Hole has an initiative looking at the contamination of cesium in the water. That's a good first start, but we need independent looks, independent monitoring also of the sea life and more than just cesium. I know Fukushima Inform in Canada is doing kind of the same program, but again, they're only looking at cesium and they need to look at other potential contamination. I don't know if that answers your question, but it really should be generations, because if you look at cesium, let's say 30-year half-life, 10 to 20 times that, 300 to 600 years.
We're speaking with Cindy Folker of Beyond Nuclear, and we'll continue this conversation about the fourth year anniversary of Fukushima after this brief musical break. Stay with us. Thank you. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips and Maya McHugh. We are looking at the fourth anniversary of the Fukushima nuclear disaster. And we're speaking with Cindy Folkers of Beyond Nuclear. Cindy, we have a few minutes left in this segment, and I wanted to go back and sort of retouch. You were reframing some of the questions we hear in the U.S. anyway. Like in Japan, we maybe hear different questions, and we work with Brian Covert, a professor and journalist there who's written a lot about the history of Fukushima for us and a lot about the untold stories and about the censorship in Japan and so forth. And that's actually what I wanted to hit on with you momentarily, is that, you know, some of the reason that we have these questions about the seafood and is it safe and is this, you know, if it was still leaking hundreds of metric tons of radioactive water a day into the ocean, which it is, someone would report that or tell us. But it's true that in Japan, they had censorship, sort of a whole series of censorship blocks or pathways blocked where they had to have people check in and they had monitors. They had the state secrets law there. I mean, so there's been a lot of censorship and half-truths and outright lies coming from the government and TEPCO from the beginning. And do you think that that might be contributing then, you know, to the lack of awareness around this issue in the U.S.?
No question. There is no question that that's contributing to it. If they were more forthright, if they were more open, if they were more honest and say they don't know when they don't know, at least that would be something. But to get up at a press conference and say, you know, we're releasing this many becquerels of this isotope, and then it's this many becquerels, and it's, you know, one compared to 150, that's a huge range. So somebody's not doing their homework. Somebody's not doing their due diligence. At this point, of course, we're in the middle of a catastrophe, so it makes it much more difficult. But, you know, they just, you know, it makes me wonder if human beings can actually handle this energy source at all, if we're actually capable of doing this. Because if you look at human beings, I mean, we learn by making mistakes. And that's okay for some technologies, which are more forgiving. But nuclear power, I think we've been, you know, we could have been a lot worse off. There could be more accidents. I think by grace of God or divine intervention alone, that we've only had two, and they're big ones, catastrophes like Chernobyl and Fukushima is what I'm thinking of. But then there's Three Mile Island, and there's all the smaller disasters and accidents. And I just think that we need to look at this energy source in terms of how it matches with who we are as human beings. And I think, you know, we learn by making mistakes, and I don't think this technology is forgiving enough for us.
Cindy Folkers from Beyond Nuclear. Project Censored has covered this issue for quite some time. We had numerous stories in our 2013 book, The Fukushima Nuclear Disaster, Worse Than Anticipated. We've actually covered numerous stories on the fairy tale of safe and clean nuclear power and energy. The fact that it's subsidized by government or couldn't function at all is something that also gets overlooked. And again, it's really just a huge and ongoing issue. And Fukushima is just a reminder of the catastrophe that awaits when we pursue into the future. As we look at alternatives to energy, we'd be wise to consider the actual dangers of nuclear power.
Yes, agreed.
Cindy Folkers, could you give us a website and some place for people to find out more about your research? And I know you're going to have something published soon about the research you've just done. I'm not sure if you can tell us about that exactly, but could you at least tell us a website where people can go to follow your work?
Sure. www.beyondnuclear.org. All one word, all little letters.
Cindy Folkers, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be checking out your website and looking for more of your research in the near future.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Here's Peter Phillips to introduce the next guest on the Project Censored Show, who is Arne Gundersen. Peter?
You know, Mickey, I watched the fairwinds.org site yesterday. Regarding, they have a new Fukushima, and this is the site that Arne is involved with. A number of their board members just went to Japan, and they toured the Fukushima district. And there's entire towns that are vacant. There's bags of dirt, radioactive dirt. They clean the topsoil, and then they put it in these plastic bags. And then they're in these giant piles waiting to be picked up, but there's no place to take them. The government doesn't know what to do with it. I mean, so this is a whole region completely devastated, and the information is quite important for people to be able to see. So that's www.fairwinds.org is that location.
Right, so we can have our listeners go to Fairwinds, FAIREWINDS, Fairwinds.org, Fairwinds Energy Education. They have some of the work of Arne Gundersen there.
Arne Gundersen is a nuclear engineer who spent his career at the nuclear power industry starting in 1972. He was a senior vice president for nuclear energy services up through 1990. And since leaving there, he's become one of the most highly respected experts on nuclear energy and nuclear energy plant safety. He is one of four internationally recognized experts who testify in court repeatedly about the dangers of nuclear power plants. And he was instrumental in closing the San Onofre plant in San Diego and the Vermont Yankee plant. And he's testifying in England at the House of Commons in terms of the power plants there.
So, Arne Gundersen has been working for decades on the issue of nuclear safety and, of course, testifying that, in fact, nuclear energy is not safe, and testifying in numerous places, numerous governments around the world, that this is, in fact, just a ticking time bomb for all of us.
Arne, are you with us?
Hi.
Arne, thank you so much for joining us. Tell us, what's the latest on what's happening in Fukushima and what are you working on?
Well, we're up against the fourth year memorial of the beginning of the accident. But, you know, it's still bleeding into the ocean, and it will for, you know, decades, if not centuries. So I think we all know when it began, March 11th, but nobody knows when it ends. And the same thing holds true for Chernobyl. We have a mess on our hands there as well. So these nuclear accidents all have beginnings and never have an end, which is truly frightening. And what we're working on is I'm off to England to speak in the House of Commons on the disaster at Fukushima Daiichi. So I'm trying to hold the powers that be accountable. You know, this was not an accident. This was a deliberate attempt by engineers to build a plant cheap. They didn't build the tsunami walls high enough, and they knew a bigger tsunami might happen. And now we're all paying the consequences because of American companies, General Electric and Ebasco, tried to build a nuclear power plant on the cheap. It's not good, and it's not getting any better.
Arne, hi, this is Peter Phillips. Is there any safe nuclear power plants? I mean, let's be real about this. Would you advocate closing all of them and building zero new ones?
Well, you know, they claim that the new ones are safer than the old ones, but it's an academic exercise. They're all on paper, you know. Of course, you know, 3 minutes before Fukushima bit the dust, they would have claimed that it was safe as well. The problem is money. You know, you can make a nuclear plant safer, but when you start to run up the cost, it becomes prohibitive. And they're already prohibitive. What we're seeing now is that new and old nukes can't compete with renewables. Forget the subsidies. Take the subsidies off the table for both sides. And unsubsidized nukes, unsubsidized renewables, renewables are winning. Now, I think 100 years from now, people are going to look back, and this is not a battle about the anti-pro-nuclear. This is a battle about distributed generation in the 21st century against central station power of the 20th century. You know, just like your cell phone, I mean, compared to a landline that went to central station switching. That was a 20th century technology. Same with computers. You know, the computer I did my thesis on, you had to walk to, and it cost $2 million. And now we all have laptops. So the 21st century is different than the 20th, and the last dinosaur from the 20th century are these large nuclear plants. I think that's how historians will look back on this era.
Arne Gundersen, on the website fairwinds.org, you have a video, Fukushima Meltdown 4 years later. Can you tell listeners a little bit about that? Hopefully we can get some people checking out your work there.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. Our board member, Chiho Kaneko, was over in Japan for 3 months, and she lives about 120 miles away from the power plant and has become renowned in her own right over the last 4 years because of the work we do with that Fairwinds. And numerous people came to her, and we were able to do a tape with her, and she and I. And it's broken. It's a five-minute piece. If you only have 5 minutes, but the whole interview was 25 minutes. And the bottom line is that this is, you know, Tokyo Electric is behaving as if they're the victim of this tsunami that just jumped out of the ocean and nobody expected. But in fact, they're the perpetrator. And if you look at the emotional burden carried by the Japanese since then, it's terrifying even today. Tio talks about the people that can't grow food in their own garden being displaced from the place. You know, we always think of the place you were born in, and it might mean mountains, streams, and the cherry tree capital of Japan is Fukushima Prefecture. So it was a beautiful place. Like Vermont is in the fall with its fall foliage, and it's destroyed. So Kiyo talks about the loss of place when you're displaced from a nuclear accident, and I talk about the fact that this is not an accident at all. This is a man-made travesty. We did it to ourselves.
Arnie Gunthersen, you're going to be speaking at the House of Commons in England regarding the construction of new nuclear power plants, I assume, in Great Britain. What are you going to say?
They have about 23 nuclear plants in Great Britain now, and there's a push on within their regulatory bodies to build a bunch more. The Guardian, which is a great newspaper, did a story right after the accident at Daiichi, and they were crystal clear that the British government went out of their way to lie to the British people about the consequences of the accident in order to perpetuate more nuclear power plants. So, you know, now we've got the English want to build a whole bunch more. And first off, they're incredibly expensive. They're 4 times the cost of renewables. And so the question I'm going to bring forward is, given the risk is high and the cost is high, why are you doing this? The 21st century doesn't have to look like the 20th century. And I think that the moneyed interests in England are driving the authorities to lock in plants with 40-year lifetimes. But unfortunately, the cost will burden the British economy for 40 years as well. So it's a combination of money and accident what I'm discussing when I'm over there.
Well, Arnie Gunthersen, we can't thank you enough for the watchdogging that you have done over the years and calling attention to all this, particularly the point you made earlier that we made earlier in the program. So it always bears well to reiterate and reinforce, you know, there really is no such thing as clean or safe nuclear power given the potential ramifications for catastrophe. And when you add to that what you had said about this is almost like a planned effort to cut corners, I mean, in other words, it makes catastrophe nearly inevitable as a result of this kind of planning.
You know, I've always said sooner or later in any foolproof system, the fools are going to exceed the proof.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened at Daiichi, that's what happened at Chernobyl, that's what happened at TMI. And we've had 5 meltdowns in 35 years. That's once every 7 years. And yet people think that these things are a low probability event. That's pretty frightening.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Arnie Gunthersen. And again, we thank you for joining us, and we wish you the best. And we'll certainly be checking out the Fairwinds website for more updates. And perhaps when you're back from England, we can have you on for an update.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Arnie. After this brief musical break, we'll be joined by Libby Haleve. Stay with us. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. Today's program is about Fukushima, the nuclear disaster there 4 years ago. And we have one final guest today. And here is Peter Phillips to introduce her to us. Peter?
Well, Libby Halevi is a journalist, a playwright who lived 1 mile from the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island when it happened. Since 2011, she's produced and hosted Nuclear Hot Seat, a weekly international news magazine on all things nuclear. Now it's in the fourth year. Nuclear Hot Seat is a podcast downloaded in 6 continents. And she now features a radiation awareness and protection talk, RAP, program in which people are empowered for themselves to minimize radiation's impact on their health and genetic future. Libby, tell us what the main ideas of protecting ourselves and families from radiation.
Thanks so much for having me on, and I want to tell your listeners that they need to get out paper and pen if they haven't already, or just use their phone so they can put in some information, because there will be some websites that I do mention in the course of this. I want to say first that there is no slam dunk. There is no guaranteed way to completely protect from radiation. However, it is incumbent on all of us to do everything that we can do to protect ourselves, and there are many actionable steps we can take to be proactive about our health. Now, there's a lot of contradictory information that's out there, and especially coming forth on the media, which is very much propagandistic when it comes to protecting corporate sources, protecting Japan, protecting economy, etc. So in order to sort through the information, I teamed up with my anti-nuclear colleague, Kimberly Roberson, who is a certified nutrition educator, and together we researched the best possible verifiable practices to protect as best possible against the negative impact of nuclear radiation. And the first thing I want to do is send people to a website we have for a program called Radiation Awareness Protection Talk. The acronym for that is RAPT, R-A-P-T, raptawareness.com. We've got a free report there that starts to cover some of the things that I'm going to be mentioning in a moment. Now, there are basic steps that we can take. I know Cindy was talking about the macro on this, which is great. I'm going to be talking about the personal is the political, and we have to take care of our health so that we're healthy enough to then take further action. So some of the steps that we cover that I have chosen to take in my own life, I can't tell you what to do, but this is what I have chosen to do in my own life, is first of all, I have chosen to eat nothing that has even touched the Pacific Ocean. That includes, ever since Fukushima happened, I have not eaten sushi. I have not eaten those lovely little seaweed snacks that are kind of like potato chips. And unfortunately, that also means that for me, Alaska wild-caught salmon is off the menu because it migrates through the Pacific. I also will not eat anything that comes from Japan. You know, there may be things that are safe, but I don't want to take that chance myself. I was at Three Mile Island when it happened. I have had some health compromise as a result of what I went through in that experience, and I find that I need to keep my level of awareness at the highest pitch possible to keep myself healthy and functioning and in good energy. Another thing people need to know is that proper supplementation is really important. I take a wide range of high-quality vitamins and especially minerals because the body recognizes certain radionuclides as being identical to minerals that the body actually needs. So if you have enough of the mineral in your body won't take up any radionuclides that might be there. But if you're low, the body goes, oh, this radioactive iodine-131 is just what my thyroid needs and sucks it in. And all of a sudden, you've got radiation in your thyroid. This is part of the concept behind people taking potassium iodide if there is a new nuclear accident, so that you have enough iodine in there. You can also take care of that by regular supplementation that just keeps your iodine level at a surface. It's important to engage in regular detoxification, especially with zeolite. Zeolite is a substance that has been shown to attract and fit radionuclides, and if you have a pure version that is cleaned and sterilized and all the rest, it will fit that radiation and allow you to pass it out of your body. There's plenty of research that backs this up based on what happened after Chernobyl. At Chernobyl, they dumped zeolite onto Chernobyl. They gave it in capsules to the liquidators who were in there actually doing the cleanup work. It was baked into cookies for the children so that they would have zeolite in their system. And I make certain that I take liquid zeolite. It's just the type that I choose to take. I take liquid zeolite drops every day for detoxification. In terms of the air, we have the potential of being hit not only with anything that comes directly from Fukushima, but both through the explosion that happened there and leftover fallout from all of the atmospheric bomb tests. There is still radiation circulating up in the jet stream overhead that is brought down to Earth because rain has to form around particulate matter. And if it forms around particulate matter that happens to be radioactive, it will bring it down to Earth as either rain or snow, which is why in rain scattered places, you will suddenly see a radiation spike after a rainstorm or after a snowstorm. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, gets mixed with the soil. It can be lifted up as dust. So it's important to filter the air. HEPA filters. Those are the best filters to have. You can use them for air purification. I know that some people say it's good to put them on the ground because that's where the dust is going to settle. Also, you can use HEPA filters with your vacuum cleaners. They're built in. That's the best way to do it.
Lee B., hello, babe. What you're saying here is you're really advocating the precautionary principle. In other words, given that we don't know everything that's going on and given that we have been misinformed and lied to about what's happening in Fukushima, you're explaining to people many steps that they can take if they happen to share these concerns.
A lot of these are just good health protections anyway. But specifically because of Fukushima, we are under an additional load. And my feeling is if there's anything that we can do to protect ourselves, we must. One of the things that makes me crazy is when I hear of our very fine anti-nuclear activists going to Japan but not taking specific cautions about their health while they are over there. And just because you're doing the good work doesn't mean that your body is going to be any more resistant than anyone else to the exposure you've had. And I've heard of activists who have come back and started having nosebleeds, which is one of the signs of exposure to radiation. I don't want that happening. I don't want that happening over there. I certainly don't want to see us having long-term cumulative effects over here.
Lee B., could you spell, you were talking about something called zeolite. Could you spell that?
Z like zebra, E-O-L-I-T-E. And there is information about zeolite in the free report we've got at rappedawareness.com.
R-A-P-T, awareness?
Awareness, yes.
Dot com.
And also, anybody who signs up for that free report, we've started sending out bulletins, usually on a weekly basis or as necessary, that highlight any of the latest information that we have run across, either something to protect yourself, something that's compromising that's out there, and also any alerts about false information in the media. For example, there seems to be a big PR push right now out of Japan, and NPR picked it up and was just putting it out yesterday, that it's okay to eat produce grown in Fukushima and it's safe, but just in case it's not safe, they're going to be adding a chemical that will block the radiation. So you may be getting radiation, definitely be getting a chemical, and who knows what that's going to do.
Lee B., we're unfortunately out of time for this segment, but you have a lot to share with people. Please give the website again, and how can people tune into the Nuclear Hot Seat?
NuclearHotSeat.com. Mm-hmm. We're on Facebook. That's also the website. Mm-hmm. And then RappedAwareness.com for the specific health protection information.
Lee B. Halevi, thank you so much for joining us again on the Project Censored Show. Great, great series of information that people need to take heed. Thank you kindly.
Thank you so very much for having me.
Liberated land, supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain.
That's our program for today. Thank you for joining us. Our program has been looking at the fourth anniversary of Fukushima, March 11th, and we'll be doing another show about that here in the near future. It's certainly a disaster that continues to concern us all. The Project Censored Show airs on 22 stations around the U.S. For more information and to listen to archives of previous shows, go to www.projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook. Anthony Fest is our producer, Erica Bringman, our engineer. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips and our intern, Maya McHugh. We'll see you next time.
About a the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burn bright with waves full of poison. Genocide wars fall for little boys. And the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the prisons and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons build the capacity citizens. In the times for the master thief, combine and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Times running out to reach all potential fame. At the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love with the brothers and our sisters.